Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, September 7th. Midland Christian names new leader, president. Lipscomb University's Doctor of Ministry Program co-director to start November 1st by Stuart Doreen. Midland Christian School has a new president. The school's board president, Jason Stockstill, announced Tuesday that Gregory Anderson will become the new permanent leader. Anderson, in 2021, began service as a co-leader of Hope Network Ministries, a nationwide ministry that provides coaching and consulting services to local congregations and parachurch organizations. In 2022, he served as co-director of the Director of Ministry Program at Lipscomb University, assisting doctoral students with project design and development and teaching occasional adjunct courses in ministry and leadership. Dr. Anderson officially begins his role as president of Midland Christian School on November 1st, Stockstill wrote. Until that time, he plans to begin an onboarding process through remote sessions with our administrative staff and by working collaboratively with a mentoring team to aid in the transition to Midland Christian. Kelly Moore, our current interim superintendent, will remain on staff through the remainder of the fall semester. We continue to be grateful for his dedication, leadership, and service to our school during this transitional time. Anderson is the product of a search over the last few months. Stockstill wrote that trustees are partnered with an internal search committee comprised of board members, staff, and MCS parents, along with an external search consultant to help determine the leadership path of the school moving forward. During this time, we were provided an opportunity to speak with several highly qualified and interested candidates for the president position, formerly referred to as the superintendent of Midland Christian School, Stockstill wrote. At the same time, our focus has been to establish a team of educators that brings a depth of experience with a vision that partners with our spiritual mission in all aspects of the school. With that concept at the forefront of everything we try to do, the vision for the president position at Midland Christian is one that carries a need to focus on strong spiritual and organizational leadership, team development, and healthy relational growth to oversee everything that God would have our school touch in the lives of our students, families, faculty, and community. Anderson holds a Bachelor of Arts in Speech Communication and a Master of Arts in Religion from Lipscomb University, according to information from MCS. In addition, he completed graduate-level course work in distance learning from Tennessee Technological University and holds a Doctorate of Education in Organizational Leadership from Pepperdine University. Anderson started his career in youth ministry and later transitioned to preaching ministry, serving churches in Tennessee and Alabama. In 2006, he began serving as Associate Executive Director of the North Texas Municipal Alliance and Chief Learning Officer of Strategic Government Resources, according to MCS. While completing his doctorate, Anderson and his family felt a pull back to local church ministry. In 2015, he moved to College Station and served the A&M Church of Christ, first as Connections Minister for 2 years and lead minister for almost 4 years. While on staff at the A&M Church, Anderson continued leadership development training as time allowed in various nonprofit contexts while expanding his audience to include business owners and corporations. Greg has been married to his wife, Daylene, for 35 years. Together they have twin sons, Will and Riley, and the couple recently welcomed their two grandchildren, Evie and Caden, to their family in 2021. Daylene brings 20-plus years of experience in elementary education, and together with Dr. Anderson's background in spiritual ministry, organizational development, and educational leadership, both feel strongly God worked powerfully in all aspects of their lives to lead them to this God-honoring, Christ-centered partnership, Stockstill wrote. Former Superintendent Jared Lee resigned in May. He is one of five former educators to sue the City of Midland and Midland Police Department officials following a grand jury's decision to not indict after the five were arrested for failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse in February. Hodges seeks seat on MISD board. Candidate: We can find the solution that best works for Midland, by Stuart Doreen. The Midlander who led the effort to beat the 2019 Midland ISD bond is running for school board. Brandon Hodges will run for the District 5 seat, one of three on the November 8th ballot. Districts 3 and 6 are the others. District 5 includes part of North, Northeast, and Central Midland. Areas include the State Highway 349 corridor, Saddle Club, Mockingbird Heights, and west and south of Midland College. Hodges will take on current Representative John Trischetti III. Hodges said he is a product of Midland ISD schools and the son and husband of educators. His wife is currently a MISD teacher and mother, was a former teacher in Midland and other places around the state. If we are all serious about student outcomes, we must manage discipline, implement a preventative maintenance program, hire and retain professional teachers, and make accountability a verb and not a noun, Hodges stated in a press release. Hodges ran the Better Bond for Midland group in 2019 that helped in the close defeat of a $569 million school bond. Since then, Hodges has been active in education governance awareness through the media, including the Facebook page MISD Homework. Hodges works with the district as part of a committee studying facility needs and has been asked to participate on a regular call with other community leaders and the superintendent. As far as issues are concerned, Hodges said he is particularly interested in making a dent in the $106 million in deferred maintenance to Midland ISD facilities. Hodges also wants to raise the performance of all Midland ISD students. He told the Reporter-Telegram that it is important to not only raise the floor for student achievement, but also raise the ceiling, specifically increasing the number of national merit semifinalists, which has dropped noticeably over the past 15 years. Lastly, he said discipline is what District 5 residents say is important, and that he is interested in the creation of better policy to manage student discipline. We did not end up with a challenged district overnight, and we are not going to be able to fix it overnight, Hodges wrote. None of us have the magic bullet as individuals, but if we focus on the kids and come together as a community, we can find the solution that best works for Midland. To keep up to date with Hodges' campaign, go to the Brandon Hodges for District 5 Facebook page, facebook.com/HodgesMISD5, or email him at HodgesForDistrict5@gmail.com. Tailgate plants strong community roots. Co-owner reflects on first year of business and looks to future with more music and fundraisers. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. There's something familiar about the wide open space and barn likeness of the tailgate, paired with a mix of long wooden bench seating and round white tables. The area feels inviting and comfortable for a newbie in town to hang around. We thought Midland needed something family-oriented with a big screen, something it didn't have already, co-owner Ariel Herrera told the Reporter-Telegram. Big screen sounds small. The miniature Jumbotron sits between two tall red silos and would be the cherry on top of any group hangout. From any seat in the house, guests can see every touchdown, replay, three-pointer, and more without squinting eyes. Wanting to expand their festivities beyond the sports seasons, Herrera and co-owner Sean Elphick added a stage back in April, bringing in musicians and artists alike from around the Permian Basin. The duo also hopes to continue to plant strong community roots through fundraisers and events benefiting organizations and causes close to their hearts. I have special needs family members. and it's important for me to bring awareness to that, so Special Olympics is one of them, Herrera said. It's really important that there's something else we're a part of that's bigger than us. Other community-oriented events include their Thursday weekly 21 and Up party in the Permian, packed with food trucks such as customer-favorite Frenchies, beer buckets, and live music. Ideas in the works include festivals, Christmas parties, famous artists, and more. Although the two have been in business together for a while now, owning their own oil and gas company since 2020, the Tailgate crew celebrates a year in the entertainment industry this month. Hoping to cut through the noise of football season with a grand party, Herrera spoke about the challenges as a new business owner and the enjoyment that comes with. Owning a business, especially a venue, nothing goes according to plan ever, Herrera said. Patience is something I've really had to work on, but I'm 26 years old and I've grown a lot in the past year. A big part of success is being a leader, so that's something we've really tried to hone in on. In the end, Herrera said the support from fellow business owners, such as Tall City Brewing Company and Sip House, keeps the day-to-day mysteries worthwhile, and being part of a community as supportive as Midland can't be beat. Sean and I are entrepreneurs, so it's been really amazing to see how far it's come in just a year, Herrera said. The people we've met along the way, pushing us forward to start something from nothing, is really cool. Planning and Zoning approves Green Tree North Lot replat by Mella McEwen. Efforts to replat two lots in Green Tree North at Island Drive and Rustic Trail, where a house has been built straddling both lot lines, drew opposition from neighbors. Opponents said the new lot that would be created is far too small compared to the other lots in the area, and any house built on the lot would not be consistent with the other houses and would impact property values. Another opponent expressed concern about the precedent approving the request would set. While stressing they understood opponents' concerns, the Planning and Zoning Commissioners approved the request by a vote of 4-1, noting that the new lot would still meet code requirements. The issue now goes before the City Council. Commissioners unanimously approved a proposed preliminary plat request by LCA at West Missouri Avenue and South K Street. The preliminary plat is part of expansion plans by the Haley Memorial Library and Museum of the Southwest, which received a zone change approval in mid-August. The site plan shows a design of approximately 9,600 square feet for an archives building, which will be used for storage and research workspace. Finally, commissioners unanimously approved a request by Jose Chavez for zone change MFJ 22, multi J family dwelling district, to SFJ 3, single J family dwelling district, in order to construct a house at 1205 East California Avenue. Bunch Teacher Looks for Help with Language Learning by Ben Schaefer. Laura Skinner, a third to fifth grade teacher at Bunch Elementary School, is asking for financial assistance in making learning language fun in her classroom on DonorsChoose.org. According to her post, the materials will reach 48 low-income students, including some who speak English as a second language or have intellectual disabilities. In total, the project, mostly comprised of educational reading, writing, spelling, and language games, will cost $566.66. Along with simple boxes of crayons and pencils or magnetic teaching cards for her classroom, other listed materials are Lakeshore Learning Materials Reading and Writing Skills Games, 100 task cards in a box from Amazon Business that help improve reading comprehension skills, Wordplay for Kids, which are described as fun and educational board games for kids ages 6 through 12, a set of 12 blunt tip scissors, teacher-created resources spell-checked card game, which Amazon says provides improved skills in spelling and recognition of spelling patterns, Double Ditto, a word association board game, Scrabble, a spelling game, Bananagrams, Word Teaser, 150 trivia questions and random topic conversation starters, EduPress Class Words game, a vocabulary exercise, Yammer, a spelling card game, and Lakeshore Learning Reading Comprehension Daily Practice Journals. There are 5 donors to the project thus far. There is $317 still needed to purchase these materials, and the post expires on November 12th. The Reporter Telegram is providing weekly updates on what teachers from Midland are asking for on the site donorschoose.org. Midland Quilters Guild honors Korean War veteran. The Midland Quilters Guild honored Korean War veteran Emil John E.J. Rashke of Midland with a Quilt of Valor last month at the Midland County Fair. Allison Pace of the Midland Quilters Guild represented the Quilts of Valor Foundation. Quilts of Valor Foundation began in 2003 with a dream, according to the Midland Quilters Guild. Founder Catherine Roberts' son, Nat, was deployed in Iraq. The dream was as vivid as real life. I saw a young man sitting on the side of his bed in the middle of the night, hunched over, Robert said. The permeating feeling was one of utter despair. I could see his war demons clustered around, dragging him down into an emotional gutter. Then, as if viewing a movie, I saw him in the next scene, wrapped in a quilt. His whole demeanor changed from one of despair to one of hope and well-being. The quilt had made this dramatic change. The message of my dream was, quilts equal healing. The model appeared simple. Have a volunteer team who would donate their time and materials to make a quilt. One person would piece the top and the other would quilt it. I saw the name for this special quilt. It was Quilt of Valor, AQOV. Since that first quilt, almost 320,000 quilts have been awarded to veterans, according to the Quilters Guild. Rashke was sworn in on his birthday, November 13, 1951, to the Marine Corps. After boot camp in San Diego, he was sent to engineering school in Fort Belvoir, Virginia, but was pulled out to be sent to Korea. In September 1952, he was shipped to Korea by boat, which took about 30 days. He landed in Japan and was sent to the front line. The company that was to be relieved had encountered massive losses, with 500 killed and the rest wounded. EJ's company was sent up to take the hill back, which it did. EJ received severe wounds and was taken to the field clinic, where he was given last rites. He was then transported to the field hospital on the top of a jeep on a stretcher. There he had surgery and 1 week later rode to Seoul, Korea, by train. From Seoul, he was put on a hospital ship for 2 weeks to Japan and then transported to the Naval Hospital in Hawaii, where he received his Purple Heart. After he had recouped, he was sent back to active duty at Camp Pendleton, California. After his tour of duty was over, Rashke was sent home on December 31, 1953. He received his honorable discharge on October 31, 1958. He served in the 7th Marine Division, Company A. U.S. holiday air travel tops pre-pandemic levels for first time. For the first time since COVID-19 brought air travel to a standstill, the number of people streaming through U.S. airport security checkpoints over a holiday weekend exceeded pre-pandemic levels. The summer travel season ended on a busy note as more than 8.7 million people passed through security in the last 4 days, topping the Labor Day weekend of 2019. That is a first for a holiday weekend, the Transportation Security Administration said Tuesday. The busiest day was Friday when TSA screened 2.48 million travelers. After a problem-plagued start to the summer, travelers encountered relatively few disruptions. Airlines canceled about 640 U.S. flights between Friday and Monday, 0.06% of the total, according to tracking service FlightAware. That's less than one-third the cancellation rate between June 1st and Labor Day. Delays were down, too. TSA said screeners found 67 guns in passenger bags between Friday and Monday, very close to the average of 17.3 per day this year. The agency said if that rate continues, 2022 will break last year's record of 5,972 guns discovered at checkpoints. Get your tickets today. Your West Texas Symphony, September 10th, 7:30 p.m., Wagner Knoll, PAC. Gary Lewis, Music Director and Conductor. Blue Hour Skyline, Kevin Day, Symphony No. 1, Gustav Mahler. Tickets start at $11, students $8. Online, WTXS.org, 1-800-514-3849. Wagner Knoll Box Office, Wednesday through Friday, 1 to 5. Proudly sponsored by Ann and Ken Hankins, Jr., Midland Symphony Guild and Odessa Symphony Guild. Scientists, COVID isn't winding down, by Laura Unger, Associated Press science writer. Is the coronavirus on its way out? You might think so. New updated booster shots are being rolled out to better protect against the variants circulating now. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has dropped COVID-19 quarantine and distancing recommendations, and more people have thrown off their masks and returned to pre-pandemic activities. But scientists say no. They predict the scourge that's already lasted longer than the 1918 flu pandemic will linger far into the future. Scientists point to emerging research that suggests the latest Omicron variant gaining ground in the U.S. BA.4.6, which was responsible for around 8% of new U.S. infections last week, appears to be even better at evading the immune system than the dominant BA.5. How long will it be around? White House COVID-19 coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha said COVID-19 will likely be with us for the rest of our lives. Experts expect COVID-19 will someday become endemic, meaning it occurs regularly in certain areas according to established patterns, but they don't think that will be very soon. Still, living with COVID should not necessarily be a scary or bad concept, since people are getting better at fighting it, Jha said during a recent question-and-answer session with U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Obviously, if we take our foot off the gas, if we stop updating our vaccines, we stop getting new treatments, then we could slip backwards. Experts say COVID will keep causing serious illness in some people. The COVID-19 Scenario Modeling Hub made some pandemic projections spanning August 2022 to May 2023, assuming the new tweaked boosters adding protection for the newest Omicron relatives would be available and a booster campaign would take place in fall and winter. How will the virus mutate? Scientists expect more genetic changes that affect parts of the spike protein studying the surface of the virus, letting it attach to human cells. Every time we think we've seen the peak transmission, peak immune escape properties, the virus exceeds that by another significant notch, Topol said. But the virus probably won't keep getting more transmissible forever. I think there is a limit, said Matthew Binneker, director of clinical virology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. What we're really dealing with, though, is there's still a lot of people across the world who don't have any prior immunity. Either they haven't been infected or they haven't had access to vaccination. If humanity's baseline level of immunity rises significantly, he said, the rate of infections and, with that, emergence of more contagious variants should slow down. But there is a chance the virus could mutate in a way that causes more severe illness. There's not any inherent reason, biologically, that the virus has to become milder over time, said Dr. Wesley Long, a pathologist at Houston Methodist. Will the next variant be another version of Omicron? Omicron has been around since late last year, with a series of super-transmissible versions quickly displacing one another, and Binneker believes that will continue at least for the next few months. But down the road, he said, it's likely a new variant distinct from Omicron will pop up. The recent wave of infections and reinfections, he said, gives the virus more chances to spread and mutate and new variants to emerge. Can people influence the future of the virus? Yes, experts said. One way is to get vaccinated and boosted. We have a virus out there that's still circulating, still killing hundreds of Americans every day, Zha said in a press briefing Tuesday. But, he added, we now have all of the capability to prevent, I believe, essentially all of those deaths. If people stay up to date on their vaccines, if people get treated, if they have a breakthrough infection, we can make deaths from this virus vanishingly rare. Not only does vaccination protect against severe disease and death, it raises the level of immunity globally. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said Tuesday that up to 100,000 COVID-19 hospitalizations and 9,000 deaths could be prevented if Americans get the updated booster at the same rate they typically get an annual flu shot this fall. About half of Americans are typically vaccinated against the flu each year. People can also keep protecting themselves by taking other precautions like, for example, wearing masks indoors when COVID rates are high. The Associated Press Health and Science Department received support from the Howard Hughes Medical Institute's Department of Science Education. The AP is solely responsible for all content. Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Wednesday. Dorothy Carolyn Harris, 91, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, September 1st. Carolyn was born in Struggleville, Oklahoma, on May 8, 1931, to Carol and Annery Nichols. She met and married Stanley Harris in 1955. She is survived by her son, Stan Harris, and wife, Terry, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, as well as a grandson and granddaughter, and a great-grandson. A public visitation for Dorothy will be held Thursday, September 8th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home in Midland. A funeral service will occur Friday, September 9th at 10 a.m. at First Baptist Church in Midland. A burial will occur Friday, September 9th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be made to Midland Baptist Crisis Center or West Texas Food Bank. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Harris family. Liddell Jumper was born February 4, 1931, in Florence, Texas. She was preceded in death by the love of her life and husband, Gene. Her parents, two sisters and their husbands, one brother and his wife. She is survived by her daughter, Jan Otho, and her husband, Jimmy. Her son, Jimmy Jumper, and his wife, Lucy, and grandchildren, numerous nephews and nieces, and many beloved friends. Viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday, September 7th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Visitation with family will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Thursday, September 8th, at Bellevue Baptist Church. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, September 8th, at Bellevue Baptist Church with Pastor Raymond Ravila, Jr., and Manuel Ariano and Tom Pinkerton officiating. Private graveside service will be held at a later date. The family asks memorials be donated to Bellevue Baptist Church, 1710 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79701. Phone 432-682-9474. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Marshall Lee Abernathy passed to his eternal life on September 1st, in Quitman, Texas, at the age of 68 after his battle with Alzheimer's. Mark was born February 7, 1954, to Floyd and Helen Abernathy in Midland. Mark is survived by his children, Dawn Marie Abernathy, and her daughters, Megan Ann Roan and husband Ethan and their sons, son Justin Lee Abernathy and daughter of Big Springs, Texas, his twin brother, Michael Lee Abernathy, and wife, Carol, of Sweetwater. Graveside services will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland on September 10th at 3 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Lowe's Gardner Funeral Home of Quitman, Texas. Mildred Louise Blewett Lawrence, age 92, of Midland, passed away on September 1st. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Wednesday, September 7th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, September 8th, at Trinity Memorial Park in Big Spring. Louise was born November 7th, 1929, in Austin, Texas, to Corbett and Willie Bell, Canada, Williford. Louise is survived by son Jesse Ladd Blewett, daughter-in-law Lita Faye Blewett, two granddaughters, a brother Tommy Williford, eight great-grandchildren, and 12 great-great-grandchildren. Louise is preceded in death by husbands Patrick Blewett and David Lawrence, Andrew Andy Blewett, her son, one sister, four brothers, and her parents. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Carrie J. Gilbert, 83, of Midland, passed away August 29th. Funeral service will be on Saturday, September 10th at 10 a.m. at Greater Ideal Baptist Church, with Pastor Hale officiating. The family has made cremation arrangements. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Danny Spurl, 56, of Midland, passed away September 4th. The family will receive guests from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, September 10th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Leonila Lycon Carrasco of Midland died on September 1st in Midland. Funeral will be held on Thursday, September 8th, 11:30 a.m. at Iglesia Casa en su Presencia in Midland, with burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Michael Jerome Kirby, 25, of Midland, passed away September 4th. The family will receive guests from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, September 8th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 7th. Craddock wanting to pass Grow, Texas. Healthcare will be big in money-laden 2023 legislative session, by Bob Campbell. State Representative Tom Craddock looks forward to next year's legislative session as another chance to pass his oil and natural gas-related Grow, Texas bill, which was okayed by a heavy majority in the Texas House of Representatives 2 years ago, but didn't come to a vote in the Senate before the regular session ended. Aimed at benefiting all the state's energy-producing areas, the Generate Reoccurring Oil Wealth Bill has broad appeal because all but 23 of Texas' 254 counties have at least some oil and or gas, Craddock said. Referring to the $27 billion surplus Comptroller Glenn Hager is predicting, the Midland Republican said it will be a tough go. It's harder with money than it is without, because everybody is wanting new buildings and new programs, he said. Noting that funding and planning are well underway for a new $95 million 100-bed mental health hospital near the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, between Odessa and Midland, Craddock said the project that's being co-sponsored by the Ector and Midland County Hospital Districts is ahead of the game because mental health treatment will be a theme in both houses of the 88th Legislature in Austin. The House has 150 members and the Senate 31. Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, was also involved in the bill to fund the Behavioral Health Center. Grow Texas would bring a percentage of the rainy day fund to the Permian Basin each year for health, schools, and roads, the Midland Republican said. It has passed the House twice in 2021, by over 120 votes. Speaker Dade Phelan is all for it, and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has been out here several times. We need millions just for roads. A lot of the basin is rural, and we are desperately in need of more roads. Hagar says the Texas Economic Stabilization, or Rainy Day Fund, will have a $13.6 billion balance at the end of this fiscal year, but it requires a three-quarters vote in both houses to be accessed. Craddock said the Robin Hood school funding system, whereby oil country districts must give part of their money to poorer districts, has a lot of people who don't like it and were looking for ways to lower property taxes. He said expanding Midland College's physician's assistance training program to graduate 120 PAs annually through the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center is also high on his agenda. American Tribune sat for Thursday. For the past 20 years, Prosperity Bank has hosted American Tribune, a remembrance of the 3,000 people who lost their lives in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. The latest edition will be at 6 p.m. Thursday at Memorial Gardens Park, 4730 East 42nd Street. Representatives from the city, Prosperity Bank, and each first responder agency will be among the speakers. There will be a musical performance by the Odessa Fire Rescue Pipes and Drums and a wreath-laying ceremony to honor fallen first responders. The flags will fly until September 19th. Shannon Raven, Vice President, Banking Center Manager for Prosperity Bank, said the ceremony started in 2002. It just gives us an opportunity to thank all of our first responders and families and folks that serve our country and serve our community, Raven said. The last couple of years, they did not have a traditional program, but they worked with the Odessa Chamber of Commerce and Board of Realtors to put the flags out. Raven said they have had great response to the ceremony, volunteer-wise. Honestly, we're just looking forward to it, she said. We're looking forward to the community being out and about and feeling normal, feeling like we're back in touch with everybody again. Taking that pause due to COVID made people realize the need for community bonding. OPD Chief Mike Gerke remembers vividly hearing about 9/11 that day and is honored to be part of the tribute. You think about 9/11, that is just a massively tragic day in U.S. history, Gerke said. He added that just remembering the first responders, citizens, and service members who lost their lives that day, it's awesome to think about their sacrifice. Director of Parks and Recreation Steve Patton said barrels with flags are strategically placed and volunteers place them around the park. The record is 12 minutes. We've done it every year, even during COVID. I think it is a beautiful event that is truly recognized as a tribute as it was designed. It says a lot about our community, and the Parks and Recreation Department and City of Odessa are glad to be a part of it, Patton said. He noted that the event is hosted by Prosperity Banks and the Parks Department is the facilitator. Patton said they are so appreciative of the bank. The flags are placed around the lake and turn the fountain on with red, white, and blue lights. With the lake embankment, you can see all the flags and see the vastness of the 3,000 flags. It's just absolutely stunning, and with the walking trail going right through the flags, you get to experience the flags and how many there are, Patton said. Quick hits. Story time. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October 26th in the Children's Department. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Permian Basin Fair and Expo. The 46th Annual Permian Basin Fair and Expo, celebrating the red, white, and blue, has been scheduled through September 11th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Gates open at 5 p.m. through Friday and at noon Saturday and Sunday. Sensory Special Day, sponsored by Superior Health Plan, will take place to those with sensory needs, and families will be allowed to enter the fair at no cost from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. today. During those hours, music and noise will be at a minimum. There will be music, carnival, petting zoo, Miss Permian Basin Fair Scholarship Pageant, Little Miss and Junior Miss Basin Fair, talent show, tractor pulls, dog extravaganza, oil burners, farming and ranching shows, creative arts, food vendors, and more. For tickets, event schedule, or more information, call 432-550-3232 or visit pbfair.com. Free STI testing and treatment. Texas Tech Physicians Family Medicine Clinic, 702 West 5th Street, is offering free STI testing and treatment from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesdays. Appointments are not required. For more information, call 432-703-5066. Line Dancing Class. Mission Fitness, 8050 East Highway 191, has scheduled a line dancing class at 6:50 p.m. Wednesdays. Registration is not required. Admission is free. People of all skill levels are welcome. Travis Tritt Performance. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland, will present Travis Tritt at 8 p.m. today. Doors open at 7 p.m. Visit wagnerknoll.com. The United Family launches Isles of Smiles campaign to help MDA. Throughout the month of September, all United Family locations across Texas and New Mexico will begin raising funds and spreading awareness about muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases during the annual MDA Isles of Smiles program to benefit the Muscular Dystrophy Association, MDA. From September 4th through the 14th, guests of United Supermarkets, Market Street, Albertsons Market, and Amigos can add any dollar amount to their grocery bill during a 14-day Donate at the Register campaign. In September, the United Family will also participate in the MDA's annual Isles of Smiles campaign. For this part of the campaign, guests have the opportunity to purchase qualifying products marked with Isles of Smiles tags across the stores. A portion of the sale on these specific products will go to support MDA's research on treatments and cure for muscular dystrophy, as well as other neuromuscular diseases. MDA funds groundbreaking research, including best-in-class multidisciplinary care at the MDA Care Center at University of New Mexico Hospital in Albuquerque, Cook Children's Medical Center in Fort Worth, Texas, Texas Neurology PA James W. Aston Ambulatory Care Center and Children's Medical Center in Dallas. Funds raised also make MDA summer camp possible, giving kids the opportunity to learn vital life skills, make lifelong friendships, and experience independence at no cost to their families. Funds also benefit MDA's advocacy efforts to provide access to health care, travel, education, and inclusive environments for the disability community. We are so excited to once again partner with MDA for the Isles of Smiles program across our stores, Sydney Hopper, president of the United Family, said. Every donation empowers children and adults with neuromuscular diseases, especially now that we're seeing the impact of MDA's investment in research resulting in treatments. We are proud to support their mission. To learn more about the 2022 MDA Make Your Move program and how to get involved, contact Cindy Clark at 989-413-3878 or cclark at mdausa.org. Five people died in separate wrecks. Four people were killed in a two-vehicle crash Thursday in Winkler County and a fifth person died in a separate crash Friday in Crane County. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Jose Luis Baeza, 34, of Andrews, was driving a Ford F-250 south on State Highway 115 around 6:45 p.m. Thursday, when the truck hydroplaned, crossed into the northbound lanes, and hit a Ford F-350 head-on. Baeza, who was wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at Winkler County Hospital. One of his passengers, Maribel Padilla, 35, of Hobbs, New Mexico, wasn't wearing a seatbelt and was pronounced dead at the scene, according to DPS. Two other passengers who were restrained, a 16-year-old girl and a 7-month-old boy, both of Wink, were taken to the hospital in serious condition. According to DPS, the driver of the northbound vehicle, Ronald Wayne Stooksberry, 67, of San Angelo, was pronounced dead at the scene, and one of his passengers, Emilio Reyes, 35, of Terrell, was pronounced dead at Medical Center Hospital. Neither were wearing seatbelts. Three other passengers, two of whom were wearing seatbelts, were taken to MCH in serious condition. DPS reported on Friday, Vicente Lujan, 45, of Stanton, was traveling south on Farm to Market 1053, when his Chevrolet Silverado veered off the road into a west barrow ditch and rolled around 4 p.m. Lujan was not wearing a seatbelt, was thrown from the truck, and pronounced dead at the scene. Teens arrested on drug charges. Driving around without headlights at 2 a.m. Monday led to the arrest of two teens on felony drug charges. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled over a Mitsubishi Outlander at West 42nd Street and North Golder Avenue after noticing the driver didn't have any lights on. When speaking with the driver of the car, Hadley Dean Sorensen, 18, the officer noticed he smelled like marijuana, and Sorensen admitted to having smoked marijuana earlier and having marijuana on him. During a subsequent search, the officer found 3.8 grams of marijuana, glass smoking pipes, rolling papers, a cylinder used to grind marijuana, THC vaping cartridges, and 94 grams of THC. When Sorensen was booked into the Ector County Jail, staff found 1.1 grams of cocaine inside a folded $1 bill in his sock. Because Sorensen's passenger, Giovanni Takoda Lozano, 17, had access to the THC, which was found inside a lunchbox on the passenger's side floorboard, he was arrested too. Sorensen was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of two counts of possession of a controlled substance and one count of possession of marijuana. He remained in jail Tuesday on surety bonds, totaling $35,500. Lozano was booked on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance. He remained in jail Tuesday on a $20,000 surety bond. The controlled substance charge is a Class II felony, punishable by a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years. The cocaine charge is a Class III felony, punishable by a prison sentence of 2 to 10 years. The marijuana charge is a Class B misdemeanor that carries a maximum sentence of 6 months in jail. Woman indicted on 4 counts of abandoning and endangering a child. An Odessa woman is facing multiple felony charges after authorities discovered she left her 4 children, all under the age of 10, alone for more than 24 hours while she went to Mexico. Cassandra Lee Esparza, 25, was indicted July 11th on 4 counts of abandoning and endangering a child and arrested on Friday. The crime is a state jail felony, punishable by a prison sentence of 6 months to 2 years. According to an Odessa Police Department report, Child Protective Services notified OPD on February 13th that they had received a call from someone who reported 4 children ages 2, 4, 7, and 9 were alone, scared, and had no water or food. They said after getting a call from one of the children asking for help, they went to the home in the 1400 block of Broughton Avenue and found the children filthy. According to the report, they said the 4-year-old had a cough, was wheezing, and was having problems breathing. They also told CPS there wasn't any food or drinks in the home, nor was there a stove or microwave. A 9-year-old boy and a 7-year-old girl were forensically interviewed and said that before their mom went to Mexico, she gave them chips, chocolate, and candy and told them to stay inside the home. The 7-year-old said she had been changing her 2-year-old sister's diaper and giving her 4-year-old sister medicine she had found in the home. She told the interviewer she was scared and they were all hungry. Ector County District Court records indicate Esparza is also awaiting trial on a September 2020 injury to a child charge, a November 2021 cocaine charge, and a February controlled substance charge. Esparza is being held without bond in the Ector County Jail on the injury to a child charge. She's also being held on surety bonds totaling $59,500 in other cases. Woman arrested after pointing firearm at man and his son. An argument over scissors led to the arrest Sunday of an Odessa woman on aggravated assault charges. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 50-year-old resident of Richardson Drive told officers his girlfriend, Michelle Louise Wood, 55, accused him of removing a pair of scissors from her safe and then replacing them. When he denied her accusations, the man said Wood pointed a loaded .38 special revolver at him and his son before putting it away and leaving. The man's son corroborated his story, and when Wood came back to the house, she admitted waving the gun around but denied pointing it at anyone. Woods was arrested on suspicion of 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a Class 2 felony punishable by a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years. Wood remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on surety bonds totaling $60,000. Trappings of Texas exhibit opens September 15th at the Museum of the Big Bend. This 36th annual Trappings of Texas exhibit, showcasing the cattlemen and women who create the best of Western art and custom cowboy gear, opens September 15th with 3 days of festivities. Trappings of Texas is a celebration of the cowboy and of the art created by truly knowing the land and the animals that call this countryside home, Executive Director Mary Bones said in a press release. These artists have an intimate knowledge of this way of life, and it is expressed in their paintings, sculpture, and gear. Bone said the exhibit is built on the history of cattle and horses, introduced from the Old World in the 1500s. Like so much of the American West and Southwest, Texas is built on ranching, she stated in the release. This year's premier artist is Phil Epp, who was born in rural Nebraska on a crop and cattle farm. His unique paintings are filled with billowing cloud formations, windswept prairies, and vast deserts, according to a biography. They celebrate the naive, the simple, the pure, the unspoiled, and the spiritual, he stated. Epp's paintings are found in both public and private collections, with works in some 40 states, Japan, and Europe. He also works on outdoor installations, creating monumental pieces in ceramic tile for corporate and civic commissions. Epp has won numerous awards and recognition throughout his 40-year career. In 2017, he became a member of the Cowboy Artists of America. Learn more about him at www.philepp.com. The weekend starts with a preview party from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. September 15th at the museum. Meet the artists and enjoy complimentary wine and beer, a cash bar, and light appetizers from Old Gringo Coffee and Cocktails. Tickets are $50 per person. From 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on September 16th through the 17th, meet some of the artists and learn about their craft at Art Demonstrations on the front porch of the museum. The opening reception and sale for registered buyers will be held from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., September 16th, at the museum with complimentary wine and beer, a cash bar, and appetizers. Tickets are $50 per person. The Trappings of Texas Ranch Roundup Party at Mitre Peak Ranch on Saturday night is sold out. The Museum of the Big Bend is located on the campus of Sul Ross State University. The Trappings of Texas exhibit closes November 5th. Local Radiothon raises funds for Children's Miracle Network at MCHS. Kix 99.1 FM from West Texas Radio Group is hosting the Kix Cares for Kids Radiothon Wednesday and Thursday, a two-day airing that will benefit the local Children's Miracle Network hospitals at Medical Center Health System. Kix will encourage listeners to make a donation to help kids treated at MCHS. Advantage Health Plus is the local presenting sponsor for the event, among other generous companies and individuals. The Radiothon will run from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday at West Texas Radio Group. Listeners can tune in to Kix 99.1 FM or online at www.kix99.net. Listeners can also donate by texting Kix Kids to 432-520-9910, calling 888-499-5437, or by stopping by to make a donation. All proceeds, 100% of the funds raised from the Kix Cares for Kids Radiothon, will directly benefit the NICU and pediatric units at Medical Center Health System. It will be used to buy life-saving equipment, specialized training for staff to better serve patients, and research to help future patients. Obituary and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday. Rebecca Renault Nunn Trulock, 58, of Mountain Home, Texas, passed from this life on August 14th at the hospital in Fort Worth. Rebecca was born April 17th, 1964, in East Prairie, Missouri, to Ollie Ann O'Rear and James Nunn. Rebecca is preceded in death by her mother, Ann Norman, father, James Nunn, daddy, Bill Norman, numerous aunts, uncles, grandparents, and friends. Those left to honor her memory include her husband, Ricky Trulock, 3 children, 15 grandchildren, and a sister. Funeral services will be held 3 p.m. Saturday, September 10th, at the Kimball Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Junction City Cemetery. Visitation will be held prior to services, beginning at 1 p.m. The family invites you to leave a message or a memory at www.kimballfuneralhometx.com. Irvy Flores Berrigan, Sr., 72, of Odessa, died Thursday, September 1st, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday, September 9th, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Burial to follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Wanda Lee Brindley, 85, of Odessa, died Monday, September 5th, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 8th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Lynn Money is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Naomi Vasquez Jimentel, 82, died Sunday, September 2nd, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.